She worked in a place that has a bar and a commercial kitchen. I thought she worked in the theater. That's a cast recording playing now, from one of the plays she worked in. She did, and doubled as a waitress. Broadway Babies. Ah, a very entertaining place, if you're in the mood for it. Home bars and kitchens, too, Eve mused. You can pick one up at a hardware or home store, no problem. I have one myself, Morris told her. I'll send her Toxoff, but from what I'm seeing, she lived clean. No signs of chemical abuse, addictions, no recent sexual activity. She never had a child, and though the blood work will confirm, I don't see any signs of pregnancy. That fits with what I know about her. So, ice pick. Specific kill spot for fast, quiet work. I don't think she's going to give us much more. The dead only know what they know. Yeah. And this one? She never saw it coming. With the rest of her morning's agenda in place in her mental file, Eve pulled into Central. She'd juggle whatever she had to for the Mira consult, she thought as she wound her way up, shifting from elevator to glide, but she had a reasonably clear picture of the victim. Talented, friendly, happy, unencumbered sexually or romantically, with no hard-edged breakups. Financially steady, as long as she kept the second job, which by all accounts she enjoyed anyway. Take away the method, Eve thought, and she'd have pegged Rylan as a random. She jumped off the glide on her level as Peabody popped out of a viciously crowded elevator. Hey, good timing. Anything from Morris? Confirmation of on-scene conclusions. The Vic lived a clean and healthy life, up until an ice pick severed her brainstem. Ice pick. They just look mean. I'd say Rylan agrees with you. She swung into homicide, stared for the 3 seconds she calculated she had before Jenkinson's virulent blue tie with its hard candy pink, were those elephants parading over it, seared her corneas. Reinecke, Jenkinson's partner, had 1 foot propped on his desk as he worked his link. A tough-soled cop shoe clad the foot, and the positioning allowed a peek of the multicolored puppies, she thought they were puppies, frolicking against the screaming green background of his sock. They were solid cops, she thought. Solid, sensible cops she'd go through any door with. And yet they insisted on assaulting the senses of all in their viewing area with their insane choices of accessories. She had to stop asking herself why. Instead, she turned and headed straight to her office and the coffee in her auto chef. Maybe I could get one. Unwinding the boa constrictor of her scarf, pink, blue, and white today, Peabody followed Eve in. Because I scored you a consult with Mira. 9:30. Eve programmed a coffee regular in addition to her own preferred black. We can follow that with the interviews with the director and producer of the play Rylan was up for, Peabody added. They have the other callback, Jessel and Brooke, scheduled for 11. That'll work. Eve passed Peabody the coffee. Contact Kowalski. I want to look at the apartment and the victim's room. We'll slide that between Mira and the theater. And put in a visit to the vet. I want to talk to the one who took the bogus emergency. On it. You've probably got a report from McNabb in your inbox. He went by the vets after he left the scene last night, as requested, since they're open 24. He took a look at the link transmission on that. He determined on site the tag came from a drop link, but since they cooperated, he brought the desk link in to triangulate location at the time of the tag. Good. I'll get up to EDD if I can. Check his progress on that. Peabody went out. Eve settled in. Once she'd set up her board, updated her book, she did deeper runs on the victim's co-workers, the roommate, and added one for the competitor, Jessalyn Brooke. Nothing and no one popped. She sat back, put her boots on the desk, studied the board. Point one. Whoever committed this murder was a planner, detail-oriented, someone who knew how to schedule. Point two. The killer was someone willing to take risks to achieve the goal. Question. What was the goal beyond Ryland's death? What was the purpose or gain? Point three. No sexual component. Ice pick penetrates, but the weapon as she saw it had been chosen for speed and silence, not to simulate sex. Question. How to resolve the personal nature of the planning, the target specificity, the intimate knowledge of the victim's habits, with the impersonal nature of the murder? She got up, walked to her narrow window. I see you, she thought. I watch you, study you. I know what you like, where you go, who you sleep with, what you want. Was it just that, she wondered? Just the thrill of taking a life? Of plucking someone at random, studying them like some bug under a scope, then crushing them? That's how it played for her. Ryland might not have known her killer. Maybe she'd have recognized the face. Someone she'd seen in the restaurant, at the Vid Palace, at the theater. But the connection, on her part, remained just that loose. On the killer's, one-sided intimacy and knowledge. The thrill of that. The goal? Maybe nothing more than taking it from selection to study to planning to conclusion? If so, Ryland wouldn't be the last, the only. In fact, she may not have been the first. She turned back to her desk, intending to bring up unsolved homicides from the past year that contained at least one of the elements of her case, and heard Peabody's pink winter boots clomping toward the office. Hey, Dallas, Nadine's here. I don't have anything for Nadine. The on-air reporter and best-selling writer was a friend, and often useful on an investigation. But this one didn't call for Nadine first and her crack skills. It's more like she's got something for you. Eve's eyes narrowed because Peabody's totally sparked. Am I going to smell double fudge brownie on your breath? No, and I'd be sad about that, except for what she did bring. She's got Blaine Delano with her. Okay. Peabody's sparkling eyes rolled in disbelief. Blaine Delano, Dallas? She's a really famous novelist. The Hightower Chronicles. The Dark Novels. She writes about cops. She writes really solid cop stories. I've been a fan for, like, a decade. So get her autograph if that blows up your skirt and send them both on their way. I'm just a little busy with, you know, murder. That's the thing. Geez, I got so flustered. As if it cured the flusters, Peabody patted a hand on her chest. Ms. Delano says she might have some information on the investigation. You didn't think to mention that first. I got really flustered. I started seriously thinking about being a cop after I read Devil's Due. But she says, and Nadine backs her up, she thinks she has relevant information. Eve considered her office and the logistics of fitting four people inside the deliberately limited space, as she'd probably have to knock Peabody unconscious and drag her out to bar her from the interview. Have them go to the lounge. I'll be there in a minute. I think it might be better if I tried to grab an interview or conference room. Santiago's a big fan, too, and Trueheart. Lots of cops are, so you may want to limit the access to her. Even as she spoke, Peabody pulled out her PPC, did a quick check. Interview B's open. Bag it, and I'll be there in a minute. She pulled up an incoming on her computer, noted that McNabb worked fast, and had interesting data. Not only a drop phone, she read, but he'd narrowed the location of the transmission to the crime scene, inside the theater, in the section where Rylan had been seated. And while he couldn't confirm it as a timed auto-send, he could and had confirmed it as a recording. Since he'd attached it, Eve ran it. Street noises, traffic, horns.
Oh God, oh God, Prince broke the leash. He ran out into the street. Oh God, he got hit by a car. He's bleeding. He's hurt. He's really hurt.
Eve heard the vet assistant try to interrupt, to calm, to ask questions, but the voice just rolled over her, spiked with panic.
I'm bringing him in. I'm running. Please, Prince, hold on.
Eve listened to it a second time. The killer had done a good job projecting fear and panic in a high register that might have been female, or might have been a male feigning hysteria. The video portion only showed a blur of lights, pedestrians, all in the jumpy, jumbled stream of someone running. Damn good job, she murmured. More than enough to have the assistant on duty call the vet on the slate. You go out some night, push record, run and babble for a minute or so, and done. Last night, you wait for your moment, send it. Wait again until Kowalski leaves her seat. Do the deed, walk out. She rose and went to see what some cop writer thought she knew. Inside Interview B, Nadine First sat at the scarred table as camera-ready as she would have been at the Channel 75 anchor desk. Her streaky blonde hair waved perfectly around her foxy face. A red top with a hint of lace played off her slim and severely cut gray suit. She lifted her brows over cat-green eyes. Lieutenant Dallas, Blaine Delano. Thanks so much for making the time. A woman Eve judged as early 40s rose, extended a hand. About 5'5", by Eve's gauge. A good, probably gym-fit build in narrow black pants, a casual black sweater. She wore her hair short, a sleek cap of brown with hints of red around a quietly attractive face. Eyes, deeply brown, met and held Eve's. Her low register voice held a smoothness along with the faint remnant of a Brooklyn upbringing. Have a seat, Eve told her. Peabody? She went to grab us some water. No point being annoyed, Nadine added, as she knew Eve well. I think you're going to want to hear what Blaine has to say. If you know what she has to say, why are you here? She came to me. I brought her to you. I've already agreed to be off the record because Blaine asked, so chill it down. I should have come directly to you, Delano said quickly, but I wanted the opinion of someone I trust and respect, and, frankly, I wanted the conduit. I'm aware you also trust and respect Nadine. So far. Eve glanced over when Peabody came in with tubes of water. She sat, waited while Delano cracked a tube. Okay, Ms. Delano, what do you want to say? I want to say, need to say, I think I might be responsible for Chanel Ryland's murder. 5. The woman seemed steady and sane enough, Eve thought, though distress eked through. If you're going to confess to murder, I should read you your rights.
Don't be such a bitch, Nadine snapped.
I have to be true to myself. Delano let out a breathless half-laugh. I appreciate the mild kick in the ass. When I killed her in dark days, her name was Amelia Benson.
You're talking about a book?
About a fictional character.
Yes, Amelia Benson was a young actress who held a series of jobs, as her acting income didn't pay the rent. She had ambitions, some talent, and considerable energy. Every week she went to a classic vid to study, as she hoped one day, to be a star of stage and screen. One rainy Wednesday, in a nearly empty theater, while she watched Grace Kelly thwart an attempt on her life, Amelia's ended. An ice pick through the base of the skull.
It rang, Eve realized, loud and clear.
Why an ice pick? Eve asked.
Such a mean and common tool.
And effective, I thought.
Sharp.
Delano spread her hands. Small, easy to come by. They found her body when they brought the house lights up after the credits. The killer, of course, had long since left the building.
Okay. You believe this applies to Chanel Ryland's murder?
I do. I'm sick because I do. The bulletin I heard this morning said an actress, a young actress, and the vid, a classic Hitchcock vid, like the one my fictional victim watched. Dial M for murder in my book. Same director. And that she'd been stabbed during the vid. The shower scene. A compelling scene like the one I use for my book. The bulletin didn't identify the weapon.
So you wrote a book with a murder victim, an actress who's killed during a vid by stabbing, and you figure it's connected to an actual case.
I do.
I do.
And worse, I think it's the second one.
Now Delano gripped her hands together on the table, knuckles whitening.
I think it's the second.
Why?
When Delano brought her joined hands up to press between her breasts, Nadine started to speak.
Let her tell it.
Nadine hissed out a breath, but didn't speak.
This was easier in my head.
Drink some water, Ms. Delano, Peabody advised. Take a breath.
Okay, yes.
She obeyed, cleared her throat.
I think I'd have been struck by the similar elements. A young actress stabbed while watching a Hitchcock vid. If subsequent reports had termed the weapon an ice pick, I'd have been more than struck. I was only somewhat intrigued by what I now think was the first. About a month ago, a young street-level LC, only a few weeks into the job, was strangled in a flop many use for their work. Her body showed no sign of recent sexual activity, no other injuries. The killer used a white scarf. She paused, drank more water. In my book, Dark Falls, a young street-level LC, only a few weeks into the job, was strangled in a flop many use for their work. Her body showed no signs of recent sexual activity and wouldn't, as this was her first client of the night. No other injuries. A sedative mixed with wine, a cheap Chianti, was discovered in her system during the autopsy. The killer used a white scarf, left in place, and tied into a bow at the side of her neck.
Delano cleared her throat again.
At the time, as I said, I was mildly intrigued. The young licensed companion, no sex, the white scarf. But it's a dangerous line of work, especially at that level. If you tell me the case is closed, that there was no bow, no sedative found, if you tell me Chanel Ryland was killed with a steak knife, I'll mark this all up to coincidence and paranoia. I'd like to be able to do just that, more than I can tell you.
Eve leaned back in the chair.
You write cop books?
Police thrillers, yes,
Maybe you know what cops say about coincidence. Deliberately, Delano picked up her water, drank.
There aren't any.
God. Peabody, get the file on the LC. Jenkinson and Reinecke caught it, but I don't remember all the details.
Yes, sir.
Delano closed her eyes as Peabody left the room.
It was an ice pick. There was a bow. You don't have to tell me for me to know it. I don't know what to do, what to think.
How long ago did you write the LC one?
Dark Falls?
The first book of the spin-off Dark series. Deanne Dark, former police detective, still one in that book, who turns in her badge at the end of the book and turns to private investigation. 8 years ago. That was a spring release as part of the Hightower series. They were partners. The second, Dark Days, with the ice pick, came out that fall. I've done 11 Hightowers and 8 Darks. 8, and now 2. I feel sick. This wasn't your fault or your responsibility. Nadine turned to Eve. She could use hearing that from you.
I don't know either way yet.
Has anyone contacted you suggesting turning your fiction into reality?
No, nothing like that. I've had readers who want to give me plot lines or ideas, and murder techniques might come into it. I've had readers upset or disappointed, even angry, that a romantic relationship hasn't developed between Deanne and Hightower. I don't know why anyone would do this, or pick my book specifically.
Anybody too obsessed or pissed?
Nothing raises a flag.
These characters, Hightower and Dark, have been around for 11 years. They've gone through changes, growth, personal tragedies, and triumphs. Not all readers want the changes. Others want more. You can't let that influence the story or the characters.
Watching Delano, Eve shifted angles.
How about personally obsessed or pissed? With you? Not the characters or the books.
Delano swept her hands up over her face, into her hair.
I lead a quiet life, Lieutenant Dallas. A deliberately quiet and simple life. I have 2 teenage girls, and raising my girls, building my career, takes about all I've got. I don't even date. I've tried it a couple times, at Heather's and Piper's urging. My girls. She explained. But I'm just not at a place in my life where I have the interest or the energy. I have friends, mostly other mothers, or, like Nadine, someone in the business. I have my family, my mother, my girls, and I have my work. I stay home more than I go out.
You're not married to or cohabbing with the father of your daughters, or one of the fathers?
Just one, and no, I'm divorced.
How long?
12 years.
But you have contact?
Not really, no.
Craig rarely sees the girls.
He's not that interested. He's remarried and has a son, which is what he wanted.
Acrimonious divorce?
Delano offered a thin smile.
Is there any other kind?
There wouldn't be in my world, but some people claim it.
I don't.
But if you think, after all these years, Craig would kill 2 women to make me suffer, I'd have to say that stretches credulity.
Was he or is he ever violent?
Once. More nerve showed as Delano shifted in the chair, linked her hands together, pulled them apart.
Do you really need this information?
She asked as Peabody came back in with a file.
I don't know what I need until I know.
Briefly, then. I married Craig when I was 24 and had my 2 girls before I was 30. I was a teacher and had been working on my doctorate, but when we married, I gave that up as Craig wanted me to stay home, keep the home, and tend to the children. He wanted, Eve repeated. Yes. And while I was content being a professional mother, I did begin to feel the squeeze with the limitations of my social activities, my outlets. I accepted that Craig was a very old-fashioned, traditional man, and he provided for us. I accepted that he wanted a son and didn't interact as much as I expected or would have liked with the girls. I accepted that he wanted things done a certain way, and his response when I didn't reach that level was subtle insults, coldness. I accepted. You may not understand. Just because I haven't been there doesn't mean I can't understand. All right. Again, Delano linked her hands together, but this time it seemed like a reset rather than nerves. I had a lovely home, was expected to make myself and that home attractive, to be a charming hostess, to be a fully involved mother. I enjoyed all that, but I wanted something for myself. I started to write. I'd always had an interest, and I had the time when the girls napped or on the rare occasions I was allowed, though I didn't see it then as being allowed, to let my mother take them for the afternoon. I told no one. It was just for me, and over the course of a year, I'd written a book. She smiled now, quick and easy. It thrilled me. Thrilled me enough, I took a chance and contacted a college friend who worked in publishing. She agreed to read it, and she liked it. Now Delano let out a sigh. What a moment that was. She had a few editorial suggestions, and I worked on those in secret. And when I had, when she read it again, she bought the manuscript. It was, and is, one of the biggest moments of my life. Delano glanced at Nadine. You understand. I do, absolutely. I contacted my mother, Delano continued. I didn't tell her, but asked if she'd like to have the girls, an overnight. Of course she did, so I arranged that. I spent the day shopping for candles, flowers, what I needed at the market to prepare Craig's favorite meal. I did all this with such excitement, such joy. I was a writer. I'd written a book. It would be published. People would read it. When Craig came home, I had the scene set. An elegant, intimate dinner for two. I had champagne. He questioned why I'd let my mother take the girls without clearing it with him, but I told him I wanted a special evening for the two of us. She looked down at her linked hands. He thought I was pregnant. He didn't know, as I also kept that to myself, that I was on birth control because I wasn't ready to have another child so quickly. I wanted another year first, so rather than argue, I'd lied. I'm not proud of that. Your body, Eve pointed out, your choice. Yes, but he wouldn't have agreed, so I took the coward's way. In any case, I told him no, not yet, but I had, in a way, given birth. That night, I poured the champagne, and I told him about the book. How I'd written it in my free time over the last year or so. How much fun it had been for me. How satisfying. And best of all, I'd sold it. He listened to all this. And I should have known. I should have seen it. But I was so happy. So inside my own excitement, I didn't see what was coming. Free time? He asked me. Wasn't that interesting? I had so much free time. I had free time because he did all the work, and I'd used what he'd given me to lie and deceive, to hide my ingratitude. She took a long breath.
I tried to defend myself. To tell him I hadn't neglected anything. Him, the girls, the house. But he took my plate, dumped the food on the floor. To remind me, I only had food and shelter because he provided them. When I objected, he hit me. When I objected to that, he hit me again. And again. He ordered me to destroy the manuscript. To tell this friend he suspected I'd had sex with, I'd made a mistake. He ordered me to clean up the mess I'd made, then come upstairs and do what his wife was obligated to do. Eve gave it a moment while Delano visibly composed herself. And did you? A stronger woman would have told him to go to hell. But yes, I cleaned up the mess, put the kitchen to rights. I locked myself in the powder room long enough to take a picture of my face, the bruises, the blackening eye. Then I went upstairs. It was rape, but I didn't fight. I didn't protest. In fact, I pretended to enjoy it. In the morning, I fixed his breakfast, apologized again when he demanded it. When he left for work, when I was sure it was safe, I packed what I needed, I packed what the girls needed, and I left. I went to my mother's. She called a friend, a lawyer. I arranged for a neighbor of my mother's to keep the girls while the three of us went to the police and filed charges. I also filed for divorce. What did he do? Eve asked. He objected. He claimed I'd committed adultery, had been an abusive wife and mother, but he couldn't prove any of it, as it simply wasn't true. He threatened, and he made the next several months very hard. But I knew he didn't want the girls, and I would not have them live under a man like Craig. I went to therapy. I wrote another book. And lived with the girls, with my mother. What about the assault? Did he get dinged for it? His lawyer suggested that the divorce would go smoother if I withdrew the charges. I wouldn't. I'd had smooth, accepted smooth, and it made me a doormat. What would being a doormat, what would allowing myself to be physically attacked, teach my daughters? He eventually pled it down, did community service, had to agree to rehab for domestic abuse, and 2 years probation. A ding. Not enough of one, but a ding. He remains bitter, and I think sincerely believes he was wronged, that he was an ideal husband to me. But he never laid a hand on me again. As I said, he remarried. He has the son he wanted and, from what I can glean, a biddable wife. Maybe tuning her up is part of the biddable. Delano shut her eyes again. I don't know. I hope not, but I don't know. He resents your work. I bet part of the bitter is lodged in your success with that work. Yes. And I'll admit to feeling some ugly little satisfaction from that. Using your work to kill could be some serious payback. I can't see it. Believe me, that's not me defending him. He's a small man, Lieutenant, and a man who prides himself on image and status. If he wanted payback, if he needed it, he'd try to smear my reputation. But to do that would smear his own, so he leaves me and mine alone, and I do the same for him. Okay. Eve let it drop, fully intending to see for herself. She opened the file, studied the crime scene photos of the street LC, the white scarf with the perfectly tied side bow around her neck. Who killed the LC in the book? And why? I had a female killer, a fairly traditional wife and mother. I later realized I based it in part on myself.
She had a psychotic break when she realized her husband used LCs, very young LCs, and murdered three before they caught her. The white scarf and bow symbolized the sash and bow from her wedding gown. A female serial. Any connection to the killer and motive from the second book? None, except the characters of Dark and Hightower, and some of the other cast I developed in the first series. In that second case, the killer was male. Paid to kill the actress by the lover of an actress up for the same part. A pro? No, a failing screenwriter trying to get backing for his script. A friend of the lover was a producer. The agreement is, kill this woman and I'll produce your script. The killer had no connection to the victim. They'd never met. The screenwriter and the producer have a falling out when the producer goes low budget and the screenwriter wants more. The producer kills the screenwriter. How? God, do you think? He sets it up to look like a suicide. Gets the screenwriter drunk while agreeing to the high-budget treatment. When he's drunk enough, the producer hangs him, types a suicide note on the computer. It's bungled, and Dark is already looking at the producer. More, the screenwriter left the outline of a new script on the same computer, one that mirrors the deal made, the killing done. The third book. The main murder, if there's more than one. I'm going to need stronger than water before this is over. Poisoning. In an edgy popular club, a crowded dance club. Cyanide added to a pomtini. A what? A martini flavored with pomegranate. They're popular. The victim is a minor celebrity. She was the girlfriend of a trash rock musician. That's what launched her celebrity. Bad girl, wild child, lives on the edge and often over it. She uses people as freely and carelessly as she uses illegals. Nice. Okay, we're going to want to see your reader communications. Start with the last year. All right, I'll have my mother put it together. She handles that end of things and the social media. You say you don't date. Is there anyone you've brushed off in the last year or so? I don't really put myself in that situation. With a half smile, Delano lifted her shoulders. I'm a 43-year-old single mother and introvert. You look good, you've got a brain, notoriety, and you've got money. Delano opened her mouth, closed it, considered. Well, yes. Think about it. You may want to talk to your mother about this, since it would give her more of a sense of what to look for, or it might spark a memory of a communication that applies. Otherwise, don't talk about this. I need to tell my girls. Teenage girls tend to blab to other teenage girls. Not if I put it under the dome. The family-only dome. It's a sacred trust in our house. My mother's the same, Lieutenant. If it's put under the dome, it stays under the dome. You can consider all this under the dome, Eve said to Nadine. Understood and agreed in advance. It'll break eventually, Blaine. You should work on a statement. Have it ready when it blows. Right. Yes. You're right. If you need me for anything, Lieutenant, anything, I'll be available. I'll get out of your way. She rose. Thanks, Nadine, for coming in with me. If you need anything, tag me, Nadine replied. I will, and I'm not going to be shy about it. I love my work. The good guys win. Terrible things happen, ugly things. But the good guys win. I'm going to count on that. I'm going to show you out, Ms. Delano. When Peabody took Delano out, Eve stayed where she was. How well do you know her? She asked Nadine. I'd call us casual friends. She's been on now a few times, gives a good interview. She's not bullshitting about not socializing much. I did meet her kids and her mother. They all came to the studio once. Tight unit. What was your impression of her?
Smart and steady.
That would be correct. The kids strike me as the same, and I'd say the smart and steady comes down from Blaine's mother. They'll hold it together. What do you know about the ex-husband? More now than I did. I poked around a bit pre-interview, but she's kept a lid on it. And casual friends don't push that line much in a non-professional arena. My impression there was controlling jerk, but the smacking around? She's kept that under wraps. But you knew about it. Nadine's lips curved. It might be that in the act of poking, I unearthed some documentation buried under layers of time, privacy, and discretion. You didn't hit her with it during the interviews. What would be the point? Nadine jerked a shoulder. She could have ridden that train herself. Probably sold more books on that track, but she didn't. Likely to shield her kids. I slap it out on air, I get that momentary reaction, some buzz after, and I humiliate a couple of kids and a woman who rebuilt her life. What's the point? The point is you'll dig, but you understand and respect the line between petty gossip for ratings and real juice. It's why she tagged you, Eve said. It's why I'm telling you I have no doubt we'll be investigating a cyanide poisoning at a dance club in fairly short order if we don't get lucky first. Why not a bogus hanging suicide? That's the next murder in the series. The second murder in the second book? First, the killer's likely done with the second book, and it was bungled. This killer isn't looking to replicate a bungle. But they all get caught in the end, Nadine argued. It's just as she said. The good guys win. Not in the book the killer's writing. Now beat it. It was great seeing you, too, Nadine said dryly as she rose. Since we're on books, I've got the Red Horse Chronicles about ready to submit. I want you to see it first, and there's no point in giving me a pained look. The book's happening. I'd like you to read the manuscript before I send it off. Just like the ICOF agenda, it was your case. Yeah, yeah. Your enthusiasm and support sings in my writer's soul. Meanwhile, since I'm getting an early start, I think I'll visit a couple journalism departments. Start dealing with getting myself an intern. I've got a candidate for that. So you mentioned before, Nadine remembered. Where does he or she go to school? She. I'd call it the School of Hard Knocks. She's smart, annoying, relentless. Relentless and sly. She's like you, basically. How old is she?
I don't know.
About 15. I'm looking for a college student. Eve just shrugged. It's your deal. If you decide to take a look at her, it's Quilla Magnum. She's at Harbor House now, but she'll be transitioning to Rourke's On the Don when it's ready in the spring. She's in a shelter? I'm not looking to take on a troubled youth. I'm after an intern, someone I can mentor. Your deal, Eve said easily. She gathered up the file, got to her feet. Did she know any of the dead girls you found in the building Rourke's rehabbing? Ask her. I've got a fresh dead girl to deal with. Opening the door, Eve jerked her thumb in a get-out gesture. Nadine narrowed those feline eyes. You threw that at me on purpose, but I'm not taking on a teenager. Whatever. Satisfied, Eve turned toward homicide and went straight to Jenkinson's desk. She curled a come-ahead finger at Reinecke. What's shaking, boss? Reinecke shifted in his seat. You've got something fresh on the Kent case? Might. I've got the file, and I've got a consult coming up, but run it through. Reinecke took primary.
Yup, Reinecke agreed. 18-year-old Caucasian female. Rosie Kent. Kid had barely started in the life. Her family didn't like it. Parents divorced, both remarried. Had a civil but distant deal going. Kent had one full sib, older sister, two younger half-sibs, one from each parent. Older sib, high achiever, going to Florida State on scholarship.
Vic's a little bit of a screw-up, Jenkinson continued. Got through high school, flunked out of community college the first semester. Started the LC training. She figured it was an easy way to make money, and kind of a middle finger to her family.
They couldn't stop her, Reinecke put in, so decided to wait it out, figuring she'd get tired of trolling the streets to make a score, get tired of being pawed for a fee and dealing with all the restrictions, the regular testing and all that.
She didn't have a chance to get tired of it. With a headshake, Jenkinson's chair squeaked when he leaned back. She was just a couple months in when she bought it.
Nobody saw the John. It's friggin' cold, right?
Reinecke eased a hip onto his partner's desk.
It's dark. She hasn't been around long enough to make friends with the other LCs, and it comes out she's standoffish anyhow. Acts superior, so nobody hangs with her. The way it plays is she comes out of the SRO where she's living and gets picked up straight off. That's how the timing played. She used one of those flops where the LCs check themselves in if the desk guy isn't on duty, which he ain't most of the time. It's like a time clock, and it auto-changes by the quarter hour. John or Jane pays up front. LC takes the key to the room on the tab, does the job, tosses the key back after, and the room goes back in rotation.
No security?
Nada, Jenkinson confirmed. As low rent as low gets. So she ran up 3 hours before the clerk, who was watching porn in the back room, saw it on his tote board. He went up to haul her out, figuring she was using it to sleep in the warm. Found her. No sex, no DNA, no trace.
Reinecke lifted empty hands.
Vic had an OTC sedative mixed with cheap wine in her system. No sign of restraints or struggle. She logged in for 30 minutes. TOD came in about 10 minutes after the login. The murder weapon, more of a sash than a scarf. White, tied in a fancy bow.
Reinecke tapped the left side of his throat.
We ran like crimes. Followed a few similar to nowhere.
Jenkinson shrugged.
Nothing special about the sash, the sedative, the wine. The Vic didn't have a regular boyfriend or fuck buddy. You had to figure the killer intended to do what he did. Maybe targeted her because she was new at it and that made her an easier mark.
Was she registered for men and women?
Yeah, and the ME cited, especially with the Vic being unconscious at the time. It didn't take a lot of strength to strangle her.
We looked at the female angle, Reinecke added, but hit the wall there, too.
We've been waiting for the next shoe to drop. You know, the bow, a symbol maybe, but so far nothing.
You hate seeing one open this long. Jenkinson glanced at the caseboard. A month goes by, 5 weeks, it stays this cold. The odds just get longer. Either a break falls in your lap, or you get another one.
You got another one, LT?
I think she was another one.
Nothing popped out of IRCCA with the white sash and bow. We got scarves and bows and sashes, Reinecke said, easing to his feet again. But not with all the elements.
We've got all of them. Just not in reality. In fiction.
Fiction? Is that why that writer was here with Nadine? Reinecke asked. The one Peabody was all about? Santiago's a big fan. Talk me into reading one. I don't much like cop books. They end up pissing me off. But this one was pretty solid. I keep meaning to try another. Never read a cop book that didn't blow. You want fiction? Jenkinson said. Go with science fiction. You know it's bullshit going in. This one didn't blow, Reinecke insisted. You're saying the Hightower writer wrote about a killing like ours? She says exactly like, and the way she ran it down, she's right about that. She also wrote one that plays like the one Peabody and I caught yesterday. Too many mirroring elements to be coincidence. Take a fresh look with this in the mix. Your victim wasn't just plucked off the street, Eve told them. She was target-specific to mimic the victim in the book. The killer had to stalk and research. The motive arrows back to the books, and the books come from the writer. Which book was it? Reinecke demanded. Santiago will have it. It'll help to take a look at it. Dark Falls. It's the Connected series. Hightower and launches the Dark series. The second's my case. The third's gonna be a poisoning in a dance club. Female Vic. Anybody gets a dispatch on that, I hear about it. I take it. Spread that word. I've got a consult. She looked over as Peabody came in. Did you get the fangirl out of your system? Born a fangirl, die a fangirl. Eve smiled very, very pleasantly. You might just, and sooner than you expect.
I wasn't just fangirling.
Peabody kept herself beyond boot-kicking distance when she joined them. I escorted her out and fangirled just the proper amount so she wouldn't freak any over the line of questioning I worked out while you were handling the more personal in interview. What line was that? How some writers use readers to beta test a story. She doesn't. I figured if she did, we'd want to look there. But it goes straight from her to her agent and editor. Nobody, not even her mom or her kids, and they're tight, see any of it. And some writers use researchers to dig up especially obscure or highly detailed information. She doesn't. So no go on that, either. She's a little superstitious about the process, like if she lets too much of what she's working on or thinking up out there, it, like, diffuses or something. But she has talked to our own Morris a few times, and she sometimes asks Detective Olivia Diaz, retired, some procedural questions. That's one of the detectives she went to when her ex tuned her up. She was out of the 8-3 in Brooklyn. They keep in touch. Diaz still in Brooklyn? She moved to Cape May about 3 years ago when she put in her papers. I did a quick run on her on the way back up. She looks solid. Reach out. Talk to her while I'm with Mira. You've avoided unexpected death.
Always a good day.
The day's not over, Eve commented. And walked out. 6. Eve grabbed a glide, then wove her way through people who obviously weren't in any damn hurry. She quick-walked the rest of the way to Mira's outer office, where the dragon admin guarded the gates. She said, "You're late, Lieutenant." Damn it. Deliberately, Eve looked at her wrist unit. 2 fricking minutes. 2. Sorry. I was detained by a little something we call murder. The admin simply smiled her thin, humorless smile and tapped her earpiece. Dr. Mira, Lieutenant Dallas is here. Of course. You can go right in, she told Eve. Eve breezed by the dragon's lair and opened the door to Mira's sanctum. At her desk, perfectly presented in an ice blue suit, the department's top profiler and head shrinker raised a finger in a 1 minute signal as she finished a conversation on her link.
She just walked in.
Yes, I'll tell her.
And yes, it's very interesting.
Thanks, Dennis. I'll see you at home.
Mira clicked off, brushed an absent hand at her mink-brown wave of hair.
Sorry. Have a seat. Dennis thinks he might have some information relevant to your case.
Eve thought of the dreamy-eyed, absent-minded Mr. Mira, a man she had a helpless, harmless crush on, and made the connection. He reads Blaine Delano. Mira sat back, eyebrows arching over soft blue eyes.
Wind, sails.
She flicked her fingers in the air.
Poof. I'm not about to tell you anything you don't know.
She came in. Nadine brought her in. I just finished interviewing her. With a nod, Mira rose, walked on ice blue heels to her office auto chef. Eve accepted she was in for a dainty cup of flowery tea.
And with the number of mirrored elements, you believe the killer used Delano's book as a template?
I do. And not for the first time. Mira paused in her programming, glanced back.
There are more?
One we know of, for now. The book in the same series, just prior to this one. The Dark series. You're not familiar?
I've read several of the Hightower books, but I haven't started the other series. I keep meaning to. Dennis devours both, and when he heard the report, he thought of the book.
She gestured Eve to one of her pretty scoop chairs, brought over the dainty cups, sat, crossed her excellent legs while she balanced her own cup with a careless grace that continually baffled Eve.
He actually pulled the book up on his reader, checked the scene, and made notes on the repeated elements. Before we discuss that, what other murder? Other book?
Jenkinson and Reinecke caught one last month. A new-to-the-life street-level LC. Strangled, no sexual activity, left in a time flop. The killer used a white sash, tied a fancy bow on the left side of the throat.
I'm not familiar with the case.
They didn't come to you. They did consult with... She flipped back through the file in her mind. Strider. But with the... For now, anyway, one shot, no wits, no history, the profile was pretty loose. No light crimes that hit the main notes. The book's the one Delano used to... What's it? Spin off the Dark character into another series.
Wait, wait. Mira closed her eyes a moment. I read that. Years ago, but it's coming back. It was a serial case, and the detective Dark character knew this particular victim.
In both the book and the case, the Vic was tranked. An over-the-counter sedative mixed with Chianti. No signs of struggle or other injuries. No clerk on the desk, no security. Both Vics are in the same age range, same race, both were new to the life.
So, repeated elements again, Mira observed. In the book, if I'm remembering correctly, it was a female killer, and the victims represented the LCs she learned her husband engaged.
Your memory's on target. I don't think that's what we're dealing with in reality. Thinking it through, Mira lifted her tea.
No. Given this second killing, it would be the books, the author, as motive.
Delano was up front in the interview. Though she'd send Mira a copy of her refined notes, she relayed the salient points now. Mira nodded, sipped her tea.
You'll have to look at the ex-husband, of course. But my conclusion, with what you now have, is these killings are too tied to her work, too indirect to strike at her, and too intellectual. You've described a